Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
You know, it's a dead parakeet. That's a funny thing.
I loved him. It was unconditional love. It was even
unconditional love.
He came over.
He doesn't know you from a hole in the wall.
He knows me. He knew you. Remember, he came over once. He went, Seinfeld, Seinfeld. He loved you too.
I'm not quite sure it was Seinfeld. And you thought that was Seinfeld.
You know?
No, it's a fire. Yeah, that's not Seinfeld.
You know why I'm laughing? At the sadness of your entire existence.
All right, it's Dave Plyer back with you on 720 WGN. So stand-up comedy legend Richard Lewis is back on television in the ninth season of HBO's Curb Your Enthusiasm, being a thorn in Larry David's side. And Richard has been making people laugh for more than 40 years. Comedy Central has recognized Richard as one of the top 50 stand-up comedians of all time. And in Richard's own words, he goes on long tours and makes people happy. They're not him. He'll be right back here in Chicago after the new year to celebrate the 40th anniversary of Zanies. And Richard Lewis joins us tonight. Richard, how are you, my friend?
Well, I take issue with almost everything you just said. I'm not a legend. It's been almost 49 years, almost 49 years of stand-up. And
wow.
I would say that Larry David's more of a thorn in my side than I'm in his side. And,
I bet.
But I am ecstatic about this season. He didn't show me a couple of episodes that are supposed to be so shocking, but he's as fearless as they come, one of the great storytellers since Norman Lear, as far as I'm concerned. And any people that are familiar or really love the series, trust me, this is the best of all nine years. So I'm ecstatic to be part of it.
It almost seems you're the voice of reason when it comes to Larry, which...
Tell my wife anything close to that sentence.
Okay.
I have not won an argument since I got married 10 years ago. We've dated for 20 years, and she would say, you have no reason to say that. It's the exact opposite. I get along better with interviewers on radio. If you were 6'5", 10, and 11, and a woman and from Denmark, you never know what could have happened. But
very good.
Stuck with a Jewish woman from Minnesota who doesn't know whether to go ice fishing or to Barney's. It's very confused.
Nice. Well, I mean, did you even realize, Richard, that at the end of the eighth season, I mean, we're talking, you know, this was back in 2011, and year after year,
right.
Is he going to bring it back? Is he not going to bring it back? Or did you always know? Because I know you've known him a long time. Did you always know, yeah, he's going to bring this back on the air? Was that kind of a mystery?
I only asked him one thing. We were born in the same hospital ward 3 days apart. We knew each other as teenagers, but hated each other at some sports camp and then never saw each other until we became inseparable best friends 8 years later when we were comics. And then we realized we were the same guys 12 years before, and it was really astonishing. But I never asked him. He came over to my house in 2000, 17 years ago, which is sort of astonishing. It's sort of like, you know, the Eagles say, well, we got all the boomers, and then they're married, their children have children, so I guess we have to sing Desperado when they were singing. You know, I miss Glenn tremendously. But I'm just saying, I mean, there's so many generations, 17 years, and it's been on, and it's all over the world. But he came over, and he wanted me to be his friend, and I had no idea what the show was. He says, I said, what's it like? There's no script. Oh, that's a good sign, you know. And he says, I'll have an outline and we'll ad lib, which sounded excited. And I wasn't in a series then. And, you know, in those years, I was touring a lot. I did some TV. I did a few little indie movies, but nothing that notable. But touring went well. I was, you know, doing town hall and big venues, and did a couple of Super Bowl commercials. So it wasn't like I was begging him to come back. I was just praying that Curb would come back because I'm such a fan. I mean, I'm not a regular. I'm in about half of them. So
that's cool.
You know, I'm like I feel I can say that I'm a fan of the show, and And but, you know, he asked me to be on it, and I did make a demand. I did say, look, you know, I'm not going to do a cameo in the first episode like, you know, back in the day, people, you're too young to know, but like an Earl in the Fall and the Family, Sammy Davis Jr.
Oh, yeah.
Showed up at,
at his
O'Connor's door, and we freaked out, and it was like, that's a
right.
cameo. And I said, no cameo. Oh, there's Richard Lewis getting some meds at the drugstore. Not that Larry would ever do something as stupid as that. But at any rate, I said, give me at least three or four episodes to see if we can develop a relationship. And if it works, it works. If it doesn't, then you gave me a shot. And he did that. And he's been and the show got reviews that I've never seen before. And they singled us out, too, in our relationship. And no one can have our relationship. I'm not boasting, but to know somebody for your entire life and to go through what we went through, it's hard to describe. I mean, it's acting to some degree. I've studied acting. I know what acting is. I've studied method acting. I don't need much method acting to get in touch with who I am, because it's me when they say action. The whole thing is so convoluted.
My wife says,
how did it go? I go, don't ever ask me that again. Remember we fought last night at the restaurant? We had a similar scene. And I mean, I don't know what I said. He's going to edit it. I don't know what's going to be in there. I always tease him about that, but he always watches my back. You couldn't have a better friend. And I think he truly is and I've mentioned it once or twice, I apologize, but the Norman Lear of the last 30, 40 years, without question, between Seinfeld and Curb. And people didn't understand how difficult it was to write a 6-page outline and hope that the actors come through and make it funny. Well, he did cast well. I mean, present company excluded, but we have a nice relationship. But the casting is insanely brilliant. And all we know, like the first episode this year, my parakeet died and he couldn't care less. And that was all I knew when I ran into him at a party. I said, what's the scene, Larry? I don't know. Your parakeet's dead. Action. You know, and
I
prayed I'd be funny. You know, what can I do?
Well, you know, you mentioned, and this is crazy to me, that obviously, okay, you met in camp in like 1960 or somewhere. But when did you find out you were born in the same hospital?
That happened when we had dinner. Our dinners are pretty Curb-esque anyway. He winds up staying for a minute or two and leaves because he doesn't want to pay a parking ticket on a meter. I mean, the whole thing is insane. But forgetting that, we were talking about, he was born in Brooklyn, so was I. I said, where were you born? He said, Brooklyn Jewish Hospital. I said, so was I. It's no longer there. And since I was born 3 days before him, we were in the same ward.
That's crazy.
It's pretty, well, I knew it was a guy I wouldn't like. Ultimately, he was mocking me because I was a preemie, and he was spanking me with his mother's umbilical cord.
Nice.
There's a little SM going on there. I don't want to really talk much more about it.
I got it. But because of that friendship,
I was only an inch long at that point.
Oh, jeez.
So, you know, it didn't really hurt that much. It actually felt like a massage.
But with all this chemistry and all this friendship, I mean, when you actually, you said, you know, it's a quick
outlet. I wouldn't go as far as to say chemistry. We have a love-hate relationship. Not hate. I love him. I would drop anything. I love his two daughters. They're spectacular. And I admire him, and I'm glad that it worked out. I mean, stand-up wasn't his thing. He just couldn't handle having people talk or order a drink when he was on. Go figure that out.
Yeah, that sounds right.
I'm glad that Seinfeld was getting hot at the time, and everybody knew Larry had a great brain, and they hooked up. What else can you say? Every channel in North Korea has Seinfeld on now. I mean, you know, it was one of the greatest successes. It's not the greatest in history.
Yeah.
So, you know, but to follow it up with a Seinfeld unplugged, I think is astonishing. And, they're both great shows, you know, and, I've made a career out of unraveling myself on stage. And I've left a lot of Lewis dust on zany stages for almost 37 years. I think I started there about 3 years after Rick Ewart, who passed, opened the club.
Wow.
And I must have done thousands of shows there. And they treat me like family. And you know, I don't do late shows anymore because I just turned 70, and I, you know, even though I like giving them PR, I, you know, well, why suffer a stroke and give them more
that's
PR?
Right. That's right, exactly. Well, I'll tell you, you were, but you've been doing this like since the 70s. So, you know, in
71,
just 71, yeah. And, you know, just like every other, you know, up and coming comedian, actor, I mean, you were working, I think, at an ad agency by day, and then you were doing stand up by night. What was stand up always something you wanted to do?
Well, my dad died before I went on stage, and my sister and brother were much older, so they were out of the house. I didn't really get along well, sadly, with my mother, so I was sort of tethered to nothing, to be honest, without making a joke out of it. And so I always was funny, and I had a lot of part-time jobs, and I was pretty broke. I mean, my mother was fine. My father made sure she was, you know, she lived decently, but I had no money. She every now and then would, you know, give her children some bread. But the truth is I had no money for years, but when I would drive in, I would work during the day and have these night jobs. And then I would say at least 340 days a year, I would drive in to Manhattan, because at that point I moved to New Jersey with my college girlfriend, which, poor thing, I'm sorry, I had to go put her through that. And that didn't last. But it took me 2.5 years, and I did have my first Tonight Show, which is pretty fast. And and then I never looked back after that. That's a long time ago. My God, it's like, you know, 43 years ago.
And I remember talking about that set that you did, because obviously any comedian who does Johnny obviously remembers exactly every moment from front to back. And you were kind of sweating it at the end because you felt like your set went a little long and you would never be asked back.
Well, there was a couple of – I have a trillion cars and stories, but the first one didn't go well because I went on it. Then he did 90 minutes.
Yeah.
And I was waiting behind that frightening Berlin Wall curtain.
Right.
Is that how it felt?
Yeah.
And George Peppard from the A-Team with Mr. T and that show back in the 70s was – he was dying of lung cancer, to be frank, and he was talking about it to the audience, and everybody was weeping.
Oh, boy.
And then Johnny said, well, we wish you nothing but the best, George. Now for his first network appearance.
Oh, man. Wow.
So let's put it this way. People felt guilty laughing. I mean, it was a nightmarish studio audience, and so I went into Carson. You know, it really wasn't my fault, but Johnny still put me in Johnny prison for 4 months, and then he always had me booked.
Yeah.
But the big break, I listen, you know, I worked on my craft 24/7. I'm still doing it now. I'm in New York now, and then I'm going to Philly and San Francisco. And I try to have a life, and I have a good marriage, and I've been sober 23 years. But
yeah, congrats.
I mean, if you saw my hotel room now, there's thousands of pages all over the living room here with premises. Devoted my life. I mean, I've done some acting that I'm proud of, some dramatic stuff on occasion. But basically, stand-up is at the heart of my life. And
absolutely. Letterman. I think Letterman is where I discovered you. I discovered you on Letterman in the early 80s. And
Letterman,
then...
well, 82, because he invited me over to his office and... he asked me to actually write for the show and move back to New York, which was I did. I just it was all I could do to get to find a dump I could afford in L.A. And I moved to L.A. to follow Carson. And, you know, it's funny. You do the Tonight Show. You're living in a dump. You have no money. You get $480. The manager asks for 15%. The agent wants 10%. The government takes 35%. And you do the Tonight Show, and you make $1.80, and you think, you know. So it's a long haul.
Yeah.
And but Letterman knew that I was a very physical comic, and it's not really that great for the camera. So I had some great shots, and I had some less great shots, and he felt it was because I was too physical, and not the material, to be frank. I had good stuff, but so he says, you can come on my show as often as you want, and never, ever do stand-up. You can just sit and squirm on my couch.
Okay.
And I did about 70 or 80 of them. And,
wow.
And then I was lucky enough to get a series with Jamie Lee Curtis and this and that, and then Larry. So I've been a lucky guy. I was ready for my breaks, but you still, Sidney Lumet said in his documentary, which I recommend, he says, of all the words he's heard from the thousands of actors he had worked with, he says luck is the number one word because, you know,
sure.
If I didn't have a fist fight with Larry David at the Brooklyn Jewish Hospital, I might not be talking to you right now.
Yeah, right, exactly. And you did a show at Rickles too, man. You did that, and you know who we lost this year at the age of 90.
Yeah, I know. I created that show with a friend, and there was some hanky panky that I don't even feel like going into. But basically, I pitched the show with my friend. We sold it, but Don really was such a powerhouse, and he really didn't like memorizing lines. He was just so astonishingly funny, and the show was very difficult for him. And then, quietly and quickly, I became to fall back into the shadows as a comedian. I became more of a straight man, which wasn't fun
right.
for me. And also, you know, Don didn't like doing the show either, so it got canceled, and it was the best for, it was best for both of us. And
he was very fond. He was very fond of you, though. I mean, when I interviewed him, I've interviewed him backstage in Vegas. He loved you.
Oh God, I loved him. To hang out with him for 6 months, it was like hanging out with the Rat Pack. He treated me like a son, you know, a son who we had lost while he was alive, which was horrible. And
right.
But he was, I cherish every moment. I was just talking about the show. It was all messed up, you know, but working with Don was just too good to be true. I've been very fortunate working with mostly really great people. And I did a movie once years ago called Drunks, where with about eight of the greatest actors in the history of the world. And somehow I got the lead. But see, that's when I was doing some dramatic stuff, and I have some range. I wasn't going to be Daniel Day-Lewis in Abe Lincoln. It wouldn't have been Richard Lewis. That would have been a mistake for Spielberg.
Of course.
Fourscore and what is that? 12 days? You know, I would have sucked.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I have some range. I'm not doing Macbeth. You know, I'll do Uncle Macbeth, a Jewish guy who lives next door to a deli. No, but I do have range. But so Larry knew that. He says, you know, if you play Richard Lewis on my show, you might as well kiss goodbye dramatic roles. And basically, other than some TV stuff, it's true. I mean, you know what? You can't have everything, you know. I'm so lucky. I mean, 5% of the people in the arts, and it's not just comedians, but writers and dancers. Yeah. They can't even afford to pay their rent, or you know. So you know, you really got to. I tell young, you know, I just turned 70, and I guess it's just sloppy when you get old. You just feel like if you really like or feel someone's talented, and it seems to me that the millennials are a little over anxious to succeed. Not that they don't, not that everyone.
No,
I mean,
you're totally right.
A blanket statement.
No, you're totally right.
But that I did thousands of shows, you know, and until I got my breaks, and I studied, and so when I did that audition, and then Jamie Lee gave me a note. You're my guy.
That's pretty cool.
There was a reason, because I was ready. And when Letterman wanted me to go to New York, there was a reason. And when Larry wanted me to be his buddy, he thought I could deliver. So I'm lucky that I had whatever gift that is. I don't know. It's hard for me to describe. I don't take myself too seriously, but I'm just, you know, at the center of my life is being sober 23 years and having a good marriage and still
That's
working
great.
And talking to you. And coming back to Zanies is really a thrill for me.
Yeah, January 17th to the 20th, and it's Zanies.
Yeah, four shows, only early shows. I know Bert, the owner, would love to rape me financially as usual. He wanted me to do 22 shows in 3 days. He says, do 23 two-minute shows, and we'll turn over the audience, and I'll make $100,000. He'll make $100,000. But he'll make sure I have a nice place to stay. So we have this ongoing battle, but I love him like family. I love the whole group. The same guys are working in the little club that were there when I was there in the early 80s.
Isn't that great?
It's just incredible. I'll just say this, you know, Second City aside, which is a big aside, I mean, I know hundreds of people practically who came from Second City, first in Chicago and then Toronto and now elsewhere. But Chicago is the place. And But you always hear that, you know, that cliche, if you can make it in New York, you can make it anywhere. And there's some degree of truth to that. But for comedy, and I'm a real historian, Lenny and Hef, who just died, who was such a proponent of and such a First Amendment guy, and with Mort Saul and Shelley Berman and Nichols, everybody, Phyllis Diller and Jonathan Winters, everybody had to go through Chicago. Because it was a bit different scoring in Chicago than scoring in San Francisco or New York. I mean, the coasts are different. And I love Chicago, and you get in there, and they're very demanding audiences.
That's
awesome. And you'll even have people say, you want to rewrite that and do it again tomorrow night? I mean, they really know what they're thinking.
That's awesome.
You know, if you can make it in Chicago, that to me, Chicago has been and will always be the most important. And I'm not just saying this because I'm on the phone with you, but it has singularly been the most important city in my career. And
oh,
will
great
be
to hear.
When I hang it up. And I can't wait to get raped financially in January next year by Bert Haas.
Well, fantastic. Well, I'll tell you what, Richard, again, here in Chicago, Zany's right after the new year, January 17th through 20th, to celebrate Zany's anniversary. You can catch Richard Lewis, of course, on HBO's Curb Your Enthusiasm. That's Sundays at 9 Central on HBO. And everything else, Richard Lewis, you can go to Richard Lewis online and on Twitter.
Thanks, Richard. Appreciate it, pal.
Okay, buddy. Thanks for having me on.
All right. Thank you. All right. We'll be right back.